Hello, my name is Robert Higgins. I am missing my co-host Kay Tuxford this week, and this is episode 53 of Screenwriting from the Trenches, a podcast about the craft and expression of screenwriting in all of its forms from the perspective of writers just like you. Well, since we're missing Kay, we are joined by two others, Michael Gull, who is the actor, and Jay Thornton, who is one of the co-directors of the movie Cactus Jack for a third episode in our micro budget series. How you guys doing?
Doing all right. Thanks for having us. How you doing?
And I saw their movie last night, guys, and I gotta tell you, I was kind of floored. I don't wanna poison the well. So I'm gonna say, like, I have a few bones to pick with their film. So we're gonna talk about it. And we're gonna do this episode just off the cuff. We're not gonna do screenwriting drama. We're not gonna do like the normal things that we do. We're not gonna, you know, we're just gonna go right into it with these two guys. But the first thing that I will do is what we normally ask, what is your origin story in this business of show? How'd you guys get into this?
You wanna go first?
Sure, mine's shorter. I started out in the 80s as a songwriter, writing a bunch of music with different bands and such, and found a very small degree of success. In the early 2000s, I got into stand-up, and I've been doing stand-up since 2001. In about 2007, I started doing really small indie films, and it's sort of grown from there. I've done about 15 low budget indie films.
Jay?
Yeah, Chris and I, who is my brother and co-creator, we grew up in Prince George's County area, Oxon Hill.
Right on.
Pretty broke, single mother, welfare, that whole story.
Yeah, sounds like Prince George's County, yeah.
Yeah. And then she married an Air Force guy from Andrews Air Force Base and whisked us off to the Philippines. And from there, we started bouncing all over the globe. But we were always telling stories. When we were broke kids, we would make our own action figures out of paper and shit. Or we'd end up getting our hands on some G.I. Joes and we'd play these epic long form storylines with them where, like, when a character died in battle, we'd bury him to taps and, like, we still got G.I. Joes, I'm sure, buried in the Philippines, you know.
I can relate to the paper things. I too did, you know, being from the poor streets of Baltimore myself, like, you know, there we definitely, you know, made some paper guns, you know, and covered them with duct tape to make them more, quote unquote, realistic. And then, you know, like ran down the alleys, like scrapping and stuff like that.
I don't know if you're the same age as we are, but back when you'd get that awesome, like, promotional HBO or Showtime for a month in the 80s, that shit lit us up, you know, and that's we fell in love with movies at an early age. I mean, our mom, she was out trying to, you know, make her way in the world. Our grandmother helped raise us, but we were watching The Exorcist and shit at, like, 5, so there was no holds barred in what we watched. So we grew up watching extremely provocative, especially for our age group, stuff, which obviously we made an extremely provocative film. And we'll get to your bones to pick in a minute, which I'm sure are valid. As Bertolucci said in the criticism and Fallout of the Last Tango of Paris, all criticism is valid. I believe that. So we were telling stories like that. And then eventually I joined the Air Force after high school and my brother was writing a screenplay back in Boston. He had ended up in Boston at that point. So I kind of got out of the Air Force, kind of pulled a clinger from MASH and got out of there after 4 years. And we hooked up, started writing some screenplays, took a few years off, came back to it a couple times. And then I think it was 2008 or 2007, we started hitting it hard. And the first real script we wrote, we placed in the top 30 in the Nickel. Out of like 5,000 something entries, that got us a manager. She got us signed at WME. We signed with Mike Asola. I don't know if you remember him. I don't think he's even an agent now, but he used to be the spec king back in like the late aughts. Kind of floundered for a bit. I mean, we scored a writing assignment off our first meeting we ever took. as screenwriters. So we kind of came out the gates pretty strong. But, you know, those first deals are always deals with the devil where it's like a full page one rewrite, but they give you polish money, et cetera.
Yeah.
We spent some time in the trenches eventually. Sold a pitch to Zac Efron where we were writing him the serial killer movie that ended up dying because he did the Ted Bundy movie. So he didn't need to play a serial killer anymore. But that put us in the WGA. And we had a TV pilot that we sold to the Weinstein Company. Luckily got the rights back like a matter of weeks or maybe months before Harvey shit hit the fan. Sold another TV pitch, went out to pitch it. We're in LA pitching it, get two meetings in, fucking lockdown start hitting. So our career has been littered with bad luck as far as near misses. We were unproduced screenwriters, even though we're in the guild and we've made some good money here and there. And eventually we're like, dude, we just got to fucking make a movie because we're just sick of this unproduced credit hamster wheel that screenwriters get caught on, which screenwriting in the trenches, I'm sure you know all too well, right?
Yeah. You know, screenwriting is just a cesspool of, which is one of the reasons why I'm sort of very much anti-Hollywood. We'll start the controversy like right up top. I hate the industry. I hate everything about it. I've been in the same trenches as you, like, you know, where you write a script and there's like, you know, you have a studio and it's like, this is a system that makes no fucking sense. You have a studio who's willing to put out like millions of dollars for a movie. They don't have a lead actor, but they'll send like, you know, the director out, they're scouting for locations, they're doing the whole thing. And for months, this movie's going, everybody's moving their lives around, trying to make sure that it's gonna happen, to put themselves in place. And then, you know, some actor that the studio thinks that they need to sell this movie over again, some other actor like that, you know, that wants to part.
Bottleneck actors.
Yeah, but they're leading their own show on Netflix, but the studio doesn't think that they're big enough to open your movie. Yeah. And you're like, this movie is less than $2 million. What movie do you think this is? We all know where this movie is going to end up. Okay. It's going to the Red Box. All right. Everybody knows where this movie's going. It's not going to be Jurassic Park. Okay. I don't know who you think you are or what movie you think you're making. This movie is going straight to the Red Box, where it's going to sit next to some movie that Bruce Willis was making. Okay. While he was trying to get as much money as he could before he, like, you know, went belly up in terms of his acting problem, before he couldn't do it anymore. It's going to sit right next to those movies. That's the movie we're making. Get over yourself. But like, so many of these like masters of the universe want to like pretend that they're making like movies that are otherwise. And I can't. It's so much of a circle jerk. And I'm just like, I can't with that.
This movie that we made that's so crazy and fucked up and just raw and nasty and vile was kind of a fuck you to the industry. We're like, let's make a movie they would never fucking make, whether it's because they don't have the balls or you could say the taste, the bad taste or whatever. But let's make an unvarnished portrayal of hatred with the kid's glove off, because what they would do is they would say, all right, you need one or two scenes to show that this guy is nasty and bad, right? Mm-hmm. And then you made your point and you move on. And to us, we were like, no, let's just steep in it. Like, if a person lives like this 24/7 and they're caught in this feedback loop and it's inescapable and they're obsessively, compulsively just stewing in this shit, what are you doing just trying to make the point narratively with this prescriptive plotting or whatever? You know what I mean?
We're like, right.
It's a fuck you. It's a fuck you narratively. It's a fuck you conventionally. It's a fuck you that we made it with no crew for fucking money you could find in your couch, probably, you know.
Yeah. It's like, well, let's start it off on a positive note because for Michael, I will say this. Like, I gotta say it, bro. You killed it. Like, you absolutely fucking killed it. Like, I believe you, dude. Like, I'm not even I'm a little worried about you right now. I'm looking at you over Zoom and like, I'm worried, you know what I mean? I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous. No, but like, the performance is real. It is absolutely fucking real. Like, I've met those dudes and stuff like that, and we're gonna get to that in a second. But like, just from a like an acting perspective, you absolutely killed it. That's a performance, like you fucking Meryl Streeped it up. You like, you know, like you absolutely like made that shit work. There was not.
Say, if he was even remotely like that in real life, we wouldn't have made the fucking movie. With
no, him. No, I'm sure that would have been a scary dude. Set. No matter who, yeah, like, exactly. You'd have been like, you'd have been like Chris's character, like, you know, the you'd have been like that. You'd have been like, right. I don't know about coming back here again. Like, this guy's scary. But no, like, if like the performance is real. So I dug that about it. Like I dug that your performance is real. But here's my problem. The movie, let's get this out there, is a movie called Cactus Jack, written and directed by Jay and his brother Chris. And
you could throw most of the blame at me. Chris had moved back to California, so this was for the most part me and Michael Gall making the film. But Chris, obviously, I mean, along the way, he's been completely on board. He knows what we're doing. He's, you know, did a lot of help as far as creatively conspiring, but as far as boots on the ground, he was only there for like a weekend during the shoot, I think. But
well, I mean, at least he was there. But your movie's about a guy who comes to do to use Michael's character, Ronald, as a potential documentary subject about hate. And he goes in there kind of without a plan. He just wants to get some raw footage. And I'm guessing, like most documentaries, like find it in the edit. And he goes in there. And then while he is there, he sort of comes to know Michael's character, Ronald, is like this. He is deeply steeped in racist, homophobic, xenophobic hate. Of the highest order. This guy makes Ed Norton's character in American History X look like Barney the Dinosaur. It is fucked up. And he is so steeped in hate. And then, he obviously has like this sort of trauma that he is living with as he is living with his mother. And I'm not gonna spoil that, but the documentary comes to witness this traumatic event when Ronald kills his mother in front of him, and then decides to, you know what, I've done that. Like, he's finally like broken the chains of that, and he's just like, all right, fuck the rules. And he takes the documentarian hostage and starts his own sort of underground podcast called Cactus Jack, and ends up going viral with his views that were once his own, but he's out there, and all of this happens under the sort of the eaves of the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. My thing is like, my biggest gripe is this. I think that Michael's character is actually too fucking smart to play the guy that he's doing. I have met these people. I've had a lot of like arguments with racists and stuff like that. Most of them cannot string sentences together. This guy starts like talking about the etymology of the word faggot, and I'm just like, that's no. Well,
I will say every single thing, for the most part, there might be a couple of points that just progressed out of what we had already been doing and what we had fashioned with his character, but every single nasty fucking racist, xenophobic, misogynist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever thing he says is of course paraphrased into his Carnival Barker delivery, but that's all real shit real people on the internet said. Like, we spent
really
2 years researching this film, reading nasty ass underground blogs and shit. Yeah, this is all out there. All that phenotypic, all that shit, I didn't know anything about it. That's me straight up cribbing it from fucking racist. So there are, and here's the thing. Yeah, a lot of dumb, ignorant motherfuckers are racist, and it's a tragedy. But what happens? There are intelligent people out there that get hijacked by hate, and that hate circumvents or short circuits the rational side of their brain. So he'll even start with some points, like maybe one of his grievances would be how men are made into buffoons and shit nowadays, right?
Right.
That's a point of contention you could actually have a debate about,
right,
in a high school setting or whatever. But his hate hijacked mind takes it off the fucking rails every time.
Right. So where it goes from like men are being buffoons to like women need to get back into the kitchen. Like, it goes into that.
Exactly. Like, and that's the whole exercise we set out to do, was what does happen when an intelligent person is broken enough to then become subsumed by this fucking hate. And then they, nowadays, everyone has the power to spread their fucking gospel via the internet.
Right.
Has the anonymity, et cetera. Because you want to hear another crazy thing? No.
Sure.
When we were kind of wrapping this up the first time, he didn't take the other character, Chris Sandberg, captive. That was another weird pivot iteration because we made this sans script, so it all came out organically. But initially, he just killed the mom and that dude, and he took control of the cameras and all that shit, right? So we had a long break where we were like, are we done with this movie? And then Chris and I got, we sold a TV pitch, so we stepped away for months and shit to work on that and everything. And then when we came back to it with so much distance, we're like, no, wait, he should capture this motherfucker, et cetera. So we had already started doing some viral marketing shit when we thought we were maybe done with the movie. And one of them was, hey, what if we start tweeting as Cactus Jack and we try and Blair Witch this shit? Like, is this real?
Oh, okay.
Is this a real guy? So we made an account on Twitter as Cactus Jack, started tweeting some nasty Cactus Jack type shit. And bro, you know, as well as I do, anything you try and, you know, advertise or sell yourself on the internet or, hey guys, check this out. No one gives a shit, right? It's like pissing in the wind. This shit took off like wildfire. Thousands of fucking retweets, whatever. And we were disgusted. Like, holy shit, it was like a social experiment, right? So after like a week of this, we put out this manifesto basically like, you're all a bunch of fucking creeps. This was a social experiment. It's a hoax. This isn't a real account. The fact that you're all fucking retweeting this and liking it, you should be ashamed of yourself. We're nuking this shit because, as my man Kurt Vonnegut here said, be careful what you pretend to be because,
you are what you pretend to be. Right. Yeah.
So you can't, in good conscience, keep tweeting this shit and seeing all you assholes fucking gleefully revel in it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I mean, it's out there, man. It's real. It's crazy. It's sobering and disgusting, but.
It is, but like my thing is like you know, I don't know, maybe I just know the stupid racist, but like my favorite story of racism isn't really a story of like anything that happened to me so much, but it's like something that hit my brain. And I saw a car which had the following bumper sticker. It said, "My ancestors fought the first terrorists." And behind the typeset was a Confederate flag. And so like that hit me and I'm like, that's stupid because it's historically inaccurate and dumb. But then what hit me in the face, like a parade of dicks just hit me in the face, was like, here is a guy who bought a bumper sticker from someone else who thought this was a good idea and had no one in his life. Like there's no, like he came up with this idea, this person, let's call him Steve. Steve comes up with this idea. He's like joking around with his fucking idiot friends. And he's like, yeah, well, my ancestors fought the first fucking terrorists. La, they're talking about the Northern Army. Ha. And they're like, he's like, holy shit, that's a great idea. I'm gonna put that on a bumper sticker with the Confederate flag behind it. And then I'm gonna put it up to sell. And there's no one in Steve's life who says, Steve, let me holler at you for a minute. Can I get you for like 10 minutes? Can I talk to you? Can I talk you down from the ledge on this? Like, I know that we were just joking, you know, and stuff like that, but I'm gonna tell you how dumb that is. I just want to let you know how actually fucking stupid that is. You should not put that up for sale. And more importantly, I don't want to lose my faith in humanity when people start buying from you, from your stupid fucking idea. There's no one in Steve's life who convinced him not to do that. That is the most sad. And it's like that, you know, because you have to like, I don't know, like you said, like, you know, racism is that hatred and stuff like that, where you could actually start having like arguments about certain things, where you could actually have a spirited debate. It then breaks down into something that is, that you can't debate. It's just dumb. It's like,
right,
like Black people aren't human or whatever like that. Like, okay, right. Like, all right, well, DNA proves that wrong. Okay. Like,
right. Like, it's like, we can't even argue at this point. You're just
right. What again, the fuck are you talking about? Right. You know what I mean? Like, okay. Like, that kind of stupid stuff.
That's how you should take his character. But for a second, to interject, I don't find that surprising at all, what you're talking about, that no one hollered at homeboy, because don't we live in this era of people living in bubbles and vacuums and their confirmation bias, and whether, regardless of which side of the political spectrum they're on, they're not even trying to hear other ideas or surround themselves with people who might come to them and say, hey, hold on, is this a good idea? You know what I mean? They surround themselves essentially with a bunch of ideological yes men, and it emboldens them. And that's kind of how these movements persist, you know?
Yeah, there is a lot of that. But I mean, definitely on both sides. Absolutely on both sides.
Yeah, people, I'm not trying to do false equivalencies or anything.
No. You're right, because there is like that thing on both sides where people are like, you know, like inside of their own sort of political spectrum and bubbles, and they don't hear anything outside of. They can't even see themselves in the mirror, because you know, sometimes you can get the most amount of racism for people who don't consider themselves to be racist. You know, especially from, you know, the liberal things. I've seen it from all sides. I have lived among both liberals and rednecks, and I'll tell you what, I've gotten it the same from both ends. It does not matter. Like, you know, I've seen, like I said, there's bumper stickers, and then there's liberals who change their bus stop so they don't have to get, their kids don't have to get on the same fucking bus stop as the black kids who don't talk pretty. You know what I mean? There's racism on both sides. There's enough bullshit to go around. But like the thing is like for me, the most persuasive racist in America, I think, is Ben Shapiro, because his racism is so drenched, is so dressed up. You know what I mean? He just looks like that nice
logic,
right? You know, it's like, it's kind of intellectual. You know what I mean? This is the guy who tried to, like, literally, he got self-owned by trying to explain that women's vaginas do not get a certain amount of wet. This was explained to me, he says, by my doctor wife, which, you know, turned into the internet going, oh my God, you know, Ben Shapiro's wife had to make him feel better by saying her vagina doesn't get wet.
And of course, Ben Shapiro's wife's vagina doesn't get wet. She's with fucking Ben Shapiro.
You know, like,
with yours?
Right, I know. And you know, this, he self-owned himself a bunch of times. You know, there's that ongoing meme of, like, you know, when they were talking about Louisiana and, like, the way that, you know, climate change would eventually put several cities and places in America underwater. And they're like, what are we supposed to do when that happens? He's like, sell your homes. And so then there's that whole thing where somebody was like, who's going to buy the house? Fucking Aquaman? Like, who's going to buy these water homes that are under Blackstone. Fucking water? Right. You know, like, right. He's owned himself, but at the same time, this man is like the head of he's one of the founders of the Daily Wire. Like, yep. It's like a
dude, they're
a
making movies now,
right? They're a multi-million-dollar fucking company, man. Like, that's
no, and that's the mainstream reason. Face of it. What right. We were exploring was the 4chan, the fucking dark web side of all this shit, the real underground, nasty, gross shit. Where those people aren't trying to even make money off of it. That's one thing with him. You could be like, oh, is he a grifter? Is he just right. See this place in the market that he could exploit? No, these people are true ideologues.
Yeah, know? That's the thing. Like, there are certain people who are just true believers. I ran into that recently where some guy who was just like talking about, I'm mistaken, commented in the wrong thread. Sometimes I try to, like, you know, you get down so far in a comment rabbit hole, and then you're like a reply rabbit hole, like a thread, and then you, like, drop in on one of these guys and try to, like, drop knowledge on them, like definitive knowledge, and then they're like, no, by the way, I'm also like, I don't care, I do support the KKK, and you're like, right. Okay, well, why? Okay, did not expect that. Then it's like, the thing for me is like, when people do this, like, it's because I see this constantly. Here's the other thing that I also see constantly, where people fly the American flag and the Confederate flag in tandem. It's always on the back of a pickup truck. Like, and you're like, sweetheart, can I talk to you for a minute? I'm just not sure if you understand that those are two different countries and they were at war with each other and they didn't right. cross over. That's not the same.
The one lost.
Yeah. Right? Not only. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we settled this debate in 1860.
Right.
Well, and we didn't, obviously, Jim Crow, et cetera. But
Americans all like idolize who's supposed to be first. You know, we know who Jeff Bezos is. We know who Tim Cook is. We know who Elon Musk is. We don't know who's the number two over at Tesla, Amazon, and fucking Apple. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know who these people are because we don't care because they're number two. We don't give a fuck. It's about American exceptionalism. And in that sort of scale, the Confederacy is right there. They are number two. They lost. Why do we still know who they are?
Well, here's a question for you, because I try and, Gall and I both, we try and be Socratic with these things. Like, let me ask questions instead of saying I know the fucking score. But when we talk about identity politics, of course, all politics is to a degree identity politics, et cetera. Everyone has their own special interests that come from who they are, where they are, their tribe, et cetera.
Right.
But I think when we get into this is that Jonathan Haidt dude, who's not the best person to quote on things, but he had coined common enemy identity politics, which now becomes the white patriarchy is the kind of common enemy. You know, when we play the identity politics game, is white supremacy not identity politics taken to its extreme in the wrong direction? You know what I'm saying? So those people, they believe they have this rich culture, the South, this heritage, because again, we're military brats.
Right.
After living in DC, we lived in Georgia. I mean, we've been down in it. These people truly, shit, my brother and I, we were separated from our father who had skipped out on us for like 3 decades. And then we were reunited with him through the wonder of fucking Facebook before he died. He's down in Galveston, Texas. We went to visit him. He's flying a fucking Jolly Roger pirate flag and a Confederate flag. And we're like, bro, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, now see, for me, it ain't about race and shit. It's just because we Southern, it's our pride, whatever. So that gets mixed up in it. But then it's a symbol that means different things to different people. I mean, I used to love fucking Dukes of Hazzard and shit. I had a General Lee toy when I was a kid. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you don't know the context of all that. And a lot of these people, to them, it's their culture. And everyone in America is now fighting tooth and nail to protect their culture. So they're like, why not us? And what happens? And this is another thing I found in our research, one of the arguments they would make. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, white folks is going to be the minority in 50 years. So then are we going to be allowed to yell white power? Because right now black power is cool because it's a minority, you know? And so the identity politics thing is a dangerous game to be playing. Are we not better off trying to be humanists and say, look, again, every podcast we go on, we'll probably end up bringing this up. Have you seen that Noah Baumbach film, Greenberg?
Yes.
Hurt people hurt people. That axiom in that movie,
right?
One of the truest things I've ever fucking heard in my life. And I contend every human is traumatized in their childhood.
Every single one. Every single one. No,
and the 100%. Way trauma manifests itself through the bad wiring and shit that takes place are these kind of ideologies. They find solace and comfort in these little fucking movements or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like that's how they get seduced into it. And of course, they're surrounded by it. It's generational, people just poisoning each other with these ideas. And we tried to touch on that, and this is a found footage movie, so we're not hammering any of this over your head. And Chris and I, we consider ourselves rational humanists.
Right.
I have a hard time calling myself any kind of political affiliation these days. I try and be rational, and I try and be a compassionate human. That's it.
Fuck, I consider myself to be a pro round earthist. Right? Fuck flat earthers. Fuck them all. I don't give a, like, I will say that publicly. I don't get, because you know why? Because, like, you ever get into an argument with a flat earther and have them drop a bomb, like, well, water doesn't bend. And you're like, okay.
You got to
have you ever seen a glass of water?
On Twitter, bro. That's the last place to go to have some fucking reasonable argument. I feel like
you've never seen it. You've never seen a glass of water? You don't know? I want to know, like, for me, I'm like, okay, go to the ends of the earth. I want to know, who are these fucking guards who are guarding the edge of the earth? Do they not have a day? Do they not get drunk in a bar and start spouting their mouths off about the end of the earth? Like, man, it's so hard guarding it's these funny. Edges. I that, swear that, to God, you know, being
TV
a part of
the show that right. my brother and I sold a pitch on, and it was called The Incorruptibles, and it was kind of this Suicide Squad thing where the CIA takes all these nasty motherfuckers and is like, hey, we'll pre-corrupt you, because that's the problem with the cartels down in the South. The cartels, there's so much corruption, we can't fight them, so we're going to pre-corrupt these motherfuckers and give them all the guns, Lamborghinis, women, drugs, whatever they want, right. and a license to kill, as long as they kill the cartels. But the world we built it in was as if the world inside Alex Jones's head is real. All the conspiracies are real about the fucking CIA and everything. And our ideas just get progressively crazier and crazier with it until by season three, it's jumping the shark where the Fourth Reich is alive and well in South America and they're running the CIA and shit. But even beyond that, it's like, hey, let's keep jumping the shark until Bohemian Grove and their actual are alien reptiles eating babies. And then let's end the show by the crew going off the edge of the fucking flat earth. Like, fuck it, it'd be hilarious. Just as a send up and a satire of all of these bad
ideas. Yeah, for the whole thing. Yeah.
I'll show you how dumb your conspiracies are by literalizing them. You know, I want to let Gall talk because he's a fucking awesome. I want people to know how not Cactus Jackie is like. So we got to get this motherfucker here talking. But I do want to say one of the things we've talked a lot about with this movie, Chris and I, again, we set out when we first said, let's make our own movie. We want to make a horror movie.
Right.
What horrifies us? Fucking hate, dude. I don't get it. It's so fucking crazy and foreign to me. Like I said, we grew up in Oxon Hill. We had to fight all the time because we were white kids, but all our best friends were black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone we love were black folks. You know what I mean? And we were like, of course, we growing up in the 80s in Prince George's County, we would watch Roots in second grade and shit. So
right,
we've been on that tip for years. We're like, we understood why they would be angry at us. So we aren't even angry at them for being angry at us because we are icons to them. Of this whiteness and shit that has oppressed their family for generations or whatever. To us, hate is just, it's like bad programming. Like, how do we deprogram these people? But it's not something you can do with the press of a button. It's mm-hmm. something that comes through time like that. You familiar with that Daryl Davis dude?
No.
That guy, he's like this black musician dude. There's a documentary on him out there. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It wasn't a great title. But he has gotten like 20 plus Klan members to give him their robes over the years because he now I don't think I wouldn't suggest you go do this or anything.
Nah.
You know, exactly. He has made it a point to say the only way to deprogram these people is to go to them and show them how human you are. Don't let them other you, et cetera, or whatever. And it's one of the most inconvenient things that it seems to be. That's the only thing that works. When you condemn them on Twitter or whatever, they just dig in their heels and shit.
Right.
So again, I'm not saying it's for everyone like you. There's going to be certain people like him who want to sacrifice their life to go do this shit. And maybe they're doing quote unquote God's work. I don't know.
Well, but, like I've had those kind of situations. Like I like sort of memorably, at least for me, I think the, one of the things that I still try to always come and try to come in through the side door. Where like I never want to come in and be like, you know, this is why, you know, you like black people are human because of DNA, like you didn't blah blah blah. You know, like I want to come in. Like I remember a few years ago, probably right around the time that you guys decided to do this movie, I remember when Tommy Loren said Black Lives Matter is the new KKK. And that went viral. It was like all over the place. And of course, being a black person in a white workplace, you know, you sort of hear that and then, you know, people are just like, you know, but she's kind of right though, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like they look at you and they're like, you know, be like, you know what I'm saying, Rob, right? You know what I'm saying, right? Like, you know, she kind of right though. And you're like, okay, okay. I'm gonna like assume that you're not fucking around with me right now. You know, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. So I'm like, you know, for me, I'm like, all right, let's come through the side door. You know what I mean? Let's see where your head's at. Be like, let's toss off all of the racism on both sides and the vitriol and all of the things. Let's toss off all of that and the violence from the KKK and Black Lives Matter. Real or imagined, all of everybody's back at zero. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, here's how it breaks down. What does Black Lives Matter stand for? Well, you know, they want Black people to get special. I'm like, nope, let's go to the Black Lives Matter website. Let's go to what they actually believe in because they actually have a manifesto. Let's go and see what they believe in. Okay, they believe in for equal treatment under the law.
That's special
for everyone.
Right.
That's what, regardless of race, color, creed, or, you know, whatever, or religion, they want equal treatment for everybody under the law. Now, let's take what the KKK believes in. They believe in genocide.
Right.
They believe in genocide. And here's the funny part. You can actually be the wrong kind of white person. Better not be a Jew. Better not be gay. Better not be trans. they believe that you have to be the right kind of white person. So not only do you have to be white, but you have to be the right kind of white.
Well, one thing Cactus Jack does, and that's something we found in the research as well, is there's nothing a white racist hates more than a white person who isn't racist.
Right.
Because you're a race traitor.
You're a race traitor.
Worse than the fucking race that you're above. You know what I mean? It's like that. They hold a special place in their heart in contempt for liberals and white saviors and fucking, you know what I mean? What they
yeah. You know. Michael, I gotta say, you're like the delivery of this thing of like the conviction in your eyes as you like are delivering this shit. Like you, I don't know what place you had to go to. That had to be like a stressful shoot. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like I gotta use that out of my head. Like, you know, like I gotta do some. I gotta sing like the entire fucking like, you know, like song over to like West Side Story, like after you'd be like, I feel pretty, you know, like at the end of the day, man, to get that shit out of your head. Like, seriously, yeah. Like going to that place, like what I gotta ask, what was that like? What was that?
I tried not to let it get in.
Right.
Too much.
Yeah, he didn't go method with this. I gotta say this because it's funny. The Planes, Trains, Automobiles scene where it's like, those aren't two pillows, and they both get up and they're like, that's how we were after every take.
Yeah.
Every take we do, and we're like, oh, fuck, God, what is wrong with us? This is disgusting. But it felt authentic, and the whole thing was to do a character piece. And would he say this? Would he do this? He would. Yeah. Fuck, we gotta do it. You know, sorry, go ahead.
I kind of approached it just kind of like Alice Cooper, who's just this extreme kind of rock star. You put it on, you take it off. You put it on, you take it off.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it was gross. And when we'd watch what we had shot, but to address the bone you had to pick earlier, your first bone, about him being too intelligent.
Right.
For this type of guy. I think that's what makes him a monster. That's what makes this a horror movie. Typically, these people are borderline retarded.
Mm-hmm. They can't put two sentences together. Right. Like, you know.
And this guy can't. He, like Ben Shapiro,
mm-hmm.
he can do some real damage.
Right.
If he gets the right people to listen to him. And I think that's what makes him really scary. Because you can go in any corner bar in the United States and find, again, if you walked in, you'd find at least two guys who'd be happy to throw the N-word at you.
Right.
But,
and I've been there.
but they're morons.
Right.
This guy is terrifying because he's not. And he's using that intelligence to build this, like, hate castle, basically. That's what makes him scary, I think.
Hate's not reasonable. You can't.
No,
it's like they say, you can't reason somebody out of an idea they didn't reach through reason. So that's what's so scary, is that intelligent people can still have these horrible fucking ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's happened to me way too many times. You know, where you're having, especially on screenwriting Twitter, where you're having a conversation with someone that you think is like a rational human being, and then they're like, "Yeah, man, fucking, you know."
Screenwriters are the worst, bro.
Yeah, they're just like, they're like, you know, you'll do something like that, you know, you're working with someone and they're, you know, you think they're cool, and then the next thing you know, be like, oh man, look what's happened to Trump, man. They're just doing him dirty. And you're like, excuse me? And you're like, oh man, come on. Like, we were having such a nice time, man. Come on, dude. Mm-hmm. Fuck. You're a Trump supporter? Like, how, dude? How? And it's like, you know, I do like that. I do like that about Jack's character too, where like he has this, you know, unrational love of Donald Trump just because he's not Hillary Clinton. Like he sort of, all of his like excuse, his sort of things about being, you know, like a weak excuse for like a white dude or like all this other stuff, and like all the sort of things that he heaps on other people, like his criticism is sort of exempt for Donald Trump, which is crazy to me.
Pass,
right? Yeah, and like,
but him, Trump is going to bring a race war, so Trump is a means to an end. And he's not, Jack isn't exactly a political creature either. He wouldn't call himself a Republican or anything. We talk about this a lot. Like, what is his ideology? It's like, it's very narrow focused. You know what I mean? He resents everybody. The Donald Trump thing is interesting because we first started making this shit in 2015, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trump supporters, quote unquote, didn't exist, which is hilarious because everyone, we thought we were going to get more flack from the left for this because of, you know,
right,
just the language, etc., how dangerous it is to spew these ideas regardless of what we're doing it for, what purpose. But it's mostly we got spammed with a bunch of one-star reviews by like Trump supporting incel type dudes who are like, this is an unrealistic portrayal of the right. This is what a dummy on the left thinks everyone on the right looks like. And we're like, no. This is a guy hijacked by hate. This is not the guy on the right or anything.
Right.
He liked Donald Trump because Donald Trump was going to drain the swamp, etc. You know, that's what he likes about Trump.
Jesus Christ. You're like, Trump's Donald Trump is the swamp. He is the fucking swamp. This motherfucker gave how much money to how many candidates? How do you not know this? He's bragged about it. He bragged about owning politicians. What the fuck are you talking about? He's the motherfucking swamp.
I don't know how old you are, but back to the 80s, we all knew what a piece of shit Trump was. Like, he's the joke. Like, I don't, it's, but that's, that shows you, man, just reason. It's got nothing to do with what the fuck's going on.
I will sort of pick it out. Like, I do want to take it from what you said earlier, where, you know, like, I do want to show, like, I almost wish that we could, like, as a, like, the thing about the Confederate flag is that it is a red, you know, to the bulls on the left, that is their red scarf. You know what I mean? All they see that and all they see is red. And I wish we could almost ignore it, because then you could like allow, like, because I feel like, you know, the Southern folks who sort of put that flag up there, they see that as like a symbol of this, of that Southern fuck you attitude. Exactly. And if we were to let our sort of mutual hatred for that die, they might get a clue to the fact that like their Southern heritage is not rooted in something that makes them a loser. You know what I mean? Because the Confederates were losers.
Right.
Maybe they'd lose that thing if we could just be like, you know what? Fine. Have your fucking little flag. Go ahead. But you do know they were losers, right? They're just like flat out, like forget the racism. They're just losers. They lost.
What you just did was, again, the Socratic thing. You do realize you ask a question.
Right.
You're not just like, you're fucking losers or whatever. Like, you don't get anywhere doing that shit. And that's the culture war we're steeped in now, you know? And back to what you were talking about with words, one of the things when we set out to make this horror movie and we're like, at this budget and everything's been done, stabby, stabby, slasher shit, whatever. What can we do? Man, in this day and age, and we kind of saw the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. We're kind of early on this because we took so fucking long to make the movie. Micro-budget nightmares. A horror of rhetoric, we've called it. We live in this era where we grew up, sticks and stones may break my bones, but nowadays words are violence, right?
Right.
So what if we make a torture porn hostel type movie, but the torture is words, man? That's the violence is words. So this is a snuff film, essentially, using rhetoric instead of blades and shit to do the job, you know what I mean? So we're trying to do something interesting and innovative. Again, fuck you to Hollywood, who would never even want to hear anything like that, you know what I mean?
So. Well, here's the thing. I do want to bring this up, and we can cut this out if you want, but not to like whatever. But like, I do have my biggest bone of contention with your movie is the ending, because from a screenwriting perspective, it upset me, and I'll tell you why. Because you guys make a big deal about Ronald slash Captain Jack's father and how he was a weak person. And how he ended up killing himself. And Ronald views his father as like he was a man, but he was a weak man. And that's why he compromised. And for me, what I would have rather seen, rather than what happens at the end, I'm not going to spoil that, but like I want to see, like, you know, the documentary filmmaker gets away and then he runs. Like, he's, like, out there in the street. And then you see him on body cam, like, to continue the found footage thing. You see him on body cam. He gets picked up, and he's, like, he's in there. Like, and you see, like, Jack is, like, forced into a corner. And rather than, like, you know, where the, you know, you hear the cops are, like, come out. We know you're in there. You're surrounded. Like, that sort of thing. And instead of, like, going out like a soldier, he puts one to the dome. Michael's got it. And he just, like, blows his own brains out. That's the way I would have, like, I would have been, like, oh.
You know, we'd consider that, and there were tons of different fucking endings and things. Again, we made this on purpose without a script, almost again as a rejection of all the conventions, including we need a script to make a movie, etc.
Right.
Because we find ourselves so often doing that And as a screenwriter, this would be the poetic justice. This is how it should end.
Right.
I watch movies the same way you do, where I start putting on my own ending of how it should have been because they missed an opportunity or dropped the ball. But we were trying to do something that was purely so character driven. It was like, forget what I want to do as a storyteller. I don't give a fuck how I want to end this. How do we think this might conceivably go down, et cetera? What felt, you know, once we brought in that character to the documentarian and kept him in the movie, he doesn't get killed at midpoint.
Right.
We're like, we got to do something with him now. Is he going to kill Jack in his escape? Our initial idea was, because Jack gets doxxed, right? You can see that in the trailer.
Right. Anonymous. The thing, yeah.
There's this blowback. So they're like, we know who the fuck you are. We're going to put your name out there. So he's like, fuck you. Come and get me. And then he retcons everything into like this machine gun nest down in the basement. And he's waiting for them to come. Our initial idea was somebody does come and you see him lock and load and go up the steps and engage with them off screen. And we have this massive heat level gun battle, but we never see it. We just hear it.
Right.
Static camera sitting in the basement with his fucking applause sign, his Nazi shit or whatever. And it was like, that was an interesting way to do it. But then it's like, who comes for him? Is it the Muslims he pissed off? Is it some brothers? Is it fucking the police? Is it, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I always still like that idea, but it just felt like this Sandberg character, would he get out once he had offered him this thing? I don't know, man. There's, you know, that's the thing too. Whenever I write something and I've sold it even, I'm like, fuck, man. 3 weeks later, a month later, in retrospect, right. I would have done this. I would have done that. You know how it is. There's a million different ways you could have ended the movie, but we just felt for what we were doing at our budget point, it made sense at the time, character-wise. So it's a valid thing for sure. That'd be a dope ending. Him killing himself. I love the idea of him being a hypocrite. We do touch on that.
Right.
By him, by the end, he's huffing the liquid wrench and shit.
Right.
And he was like, you know, cowards fucking use drugs as a crutch and all this shit. And by the end, he's doing the same stuff. So we try to touch on his hypocrisy.
Right.
Show that he's as bad as his dad is, but
well, I mean, yeah, at the end, him he's telling so, himself like,
could have been dope, but it might have just felt too writerly to me, you know?
Right. At the end, you know, he's so deeply entrenched into the thing, like there's no coming back. Like he's more of a he's almost like the Freddy Krueger of racism at that point. Like he's so like into like the thing, there's no pulling this guy back from like anything, you know what I mean?
Right. And that's like, why we kind of felt like he would envision himself a soldier who would go out fighting, but he's really not. He's just some fucking creep who abducted right. a dude.
He's just a creep in a basement. And to the extent, I could say like that's sort of, you know, that, you know, like where at the end, like what you have is he was beat by a guy who was drinking his own piss and now he's just a corpse in his mom's basement. You know what I mean? Like, right. like, you know, so there's certain like a poetic, you know, justice to that. But for me, it's like, yeah, like
I agree, man, for sure.
But like,
I wish we had filmed a bunch of alternate endings and we could put out a DVD with fucking classic 90s style alternate mm-hmm. endings and shit, you know, but that is tough. Endings in general, let's talk about that as writers, and Gall is a creative and a writer and even a joke writer, like a punchline.
Yeah.
Endings are fucking tough, dude. You got to pick one. That's one of the worst things about it. That's why TV is so attractive to so many writers, because it's all act one, perpetually, set up. You know yes. what I mean?
Yeah.
Endings are tough as shit.
Yeah. And then if you think about it, you know, even in terms of like, you know, sort of endings that we love, you know, there are only like a few where like, you know, where sort of people universally agree on like, you know, how like people were super upset about the Seinfeld ending, you know, and like, you know, they're still upset about it. The Lost folks will not shut the fuck up about how much they are like, they feel sort of entitled to this ending. Like they are still mad about that to this day.
I'm still pissed about Breaking Bad's ending.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I have watched that last episode 36 times easily. And I cannot accept that the trajectory of that gun he had set up, he did not get hit with a bullet. It's not possible. And I want.
I think it was. I thought it was a ricochet, but I don't know.
But if you look at and people have said that to me, but right. if you look at watch that scene. None of those bullets are ricocheting. They're going through the opposite wall. They're going through the refrigerator. And what they're trying to tell me happened, because right before he gets the impact of getting hit, it hits one of the pool counters on the, above the billiards table.
Right.
And we're supposed to believe that it's going through walls, going through refrigerators, but it ricocheted off a billiards counter and went into his body.
Some magic bullet theory shit.
It went in his body on the wrong side.
Yeah,
it went into the front, which was up against Jesse because he was laying on him.
Right.
Oh, makes me crazy. Makes me crazy.
You know what, though? If you had Vince Gilligan here, he'd probably say the same shit I just said. Endings are tough, man. I don't know. Three weeks after we wrapped, I was like, fuck, we should have done this, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, I know they struggled over that ending and stuff like that. I'll give you that. Like, I don't know. For me, I just let it go because, like, I was like, that's one of those things is like not going to bother me and stuff like that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it is like a movie. You know, there's a certain amount of unreality in it. But like at least that one, I think, is more beloved than most of the things. Because at least I feel like most people feel like it's narratively satisfying. Like at the end with him, like, you know, I think a lot of people wanted to see Walt in jail, but him sort of like wandering and like almost like grading his student over like the lab, like how he kept the lab. And, you know, he's still a teacher. He's still that fucking teacher. Like, despite the fact that he just murdered a bunch of like white supremacists, speaking of, like, you know what I mean? Like a bunch of white supremacist meth dealers. He's still that teacher who's just like, no, this is A-plus work. This is real good work. But yeah, so, you know,
narratively satisfying, though, that's exactly what you're talking about. Your problem with our ending is that it wasn't narratively satisfying.
I wanted more of a comeuppance for Jack.
That's valid, as I said, all shit's valid, you know.
But you guys did made a motherfucker of a film, and it's coming out on the 4th.
Yeah, supposedly. I mean, this kind of movie, it's been so treacherous, man. It's like, obviously, super hard fucking movie for word of mouth because it's risky. You put some social currency on the table and you're like, you got to see this movie. It's fucking dope.
Right.
Even if you feel that way, people are going to be reticent to say that. You know what I mean? For various reasons.
Well, so, I'm going to say, like, if you want to see a movie that's going to challenge you to your core, like, you know, like I will say, see Cactus Jack. This movie will make you think. I will say that it does make you think.
Trigger warnings, though, it can be painful for some people. And we didn't set out to like hurt anybody and shit, but we just, again, it's like, if we're going to dive into this world, let's not fucking kid glove it, man. You know?
Yeah, you should feel like you're trapped in that basement with him, just along with Chris.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what it feels like. They just don't stop. They just keep hitting you in the head with it over and over.
I like how he keeps
again
calling him Spielberg. Shit was hilarious. That was my, like, hey, Spielberg, I see you. But I appreciate you guys coming on the show. Normally we would do like a bunch of things, but we got into it. This was completely off the cuff. We've never done an episode like this, but I felt it was appropriate for the movie.
Hey man, I appreciate you watching it, taking the time, talking to us, not immediately just being like, these dudes are fucking creeps, you know. I mean, our manager, who's been in a foxhole with us since day one, we signed with our same manager, we've been with like 12 years. I mean, he's a Jewish son of a like Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we knew along the way, we're like, at least the right people know what the fuck we're trying to do. So we feel kind of immune to when the people come out trying to cancel us. Eventually, I'm sure it'll happen if the movie gets out there in any kind of, you know, big way. It's like, I don't care. Just let's talk about it.
Right.
Like you just did. Even if you got bones to pick, let's talk about the bones and let's, you know, acknowledge that your bones are valid too. Cause we're just fucking making art, man. We don't know. We're going out on a limb trying to tell a story about some radioactive shit. So yeah, there might be a couple landmines we step on or tripwires we didn't see, you know. Let us know about them. Let's discuss them.
Try not to
brand us as anything because we made this movie, you know?
Well, I think the most thing is that, you know, people, like we said, you know, a lot of folks are worried, you know, that they just make disposable media. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things I think all of us are trying to make stuff that is going to stick because, you know, especially when you're making like these micro budget films and stuff like that, you know, you make these films that like, it's two people in an apartment doing, you know, they're in love or whatever. You know, like there's a, you know, there's always that thing where it's just like make something that does not stick. It just slides off the wall. And, you know, it just, it's content. And, you know, that's, if you're in the business of making art, and all art is political, you know, like if you're in the business to make something that you want people to feel, you know, in that respect, you guys will succeed in all measures. I don't see that anybody coming away from this movie being like, well, that was okay.
Right. Exactly. And we got enough of that out there.
Yeah.
If you want to, that was okay. Go watch Netflix.
Jay, Michael, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to do this thing. Screenwriting from the Trenches can currently be found on Anchor, Apple, and Google Spotify podcasts, as well as KevinLMartin.com. Our screenwriting Twitter drama theme song, When We Play It, is written by Zach Morrison and used with his permission. And since we're a new podcast, we'd appreciate it if you dropped a like or rated us 5 stars on whatever platform you patronize, because algorithms. For questions for us that we can and we'll answer on the show, email me at rob@perspectivemofo.com. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Perspectival Mofo. My co-host Kay, when she's here, is at Kay Tux. What are you guys on Twitter?
I mean, I don't even fuck with Twitter. I despise Twitter. My brother and I are them Thorntons on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you ain't going to find me saying shit on there except retweeting anytime someone does something about Cactus Jack. But Gall and I are doing a podcast called Hard Out Now that my brother and I were doing for a while, but now Gall and I are co-hosting, where it's basically a ticking time bomb exactly at the 60-minute mark. There's a buzzer. Doesn't matter if we got an Oscar-winning guest mid-sentence, that shit's done. Feel free to come on sometime, dude. I actually really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Chop it up about all kinds of shit.
We spin a wheel. Yeah, we spin a wheel. It's the same wheel that we used in
the movie. Right.
But with different things written on. Nobody has to drink piss.
Yes, because I have a very sensitive stomach. I just don't. Right. Anyway, these things, as well as my YouTube channel series, How to Make a Movie for $1,000, which is soon to be rebranded as a challenge series, which will all be linked in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. We hope that you continue to do so. Now stop procrastinating, jerks. Those pages aren't going to write themselves. Guys, thank you for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you. And hopefully I'll get to return the favor and come on Hard Out.
Cool, man. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.